Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. And you say Shot City.
Coming home again.
I met this girl when I was 3 years old.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Saturday, January 24th, 2009, 10:30 in the a.m. And before I get into anything, I just want to thank and acknowledge all those rabid fans who came out to the inauguration on Tuesday. Listen, I would have liked to have been there, but it was one of those things where the mind was willing, but the body wasn't having it. I was not standing out there in 30-degree weather, 15 degrees if you count the wind chill. I mean, for 4 or 5 hours. I mean, that's all there is to it. I enjoyed it on television, and DC, the whole DMV in general, did itself proud with, you know, being the gracious host that they were. I didn't hear of any incidents, and you know, if there would have been an incident, you would have heard about it. You would have heard about it for sure, but nothing to that, and to hold all those people. I mean, you know, they say there was 2 million people at the inauguration. D.C. is only built for about 600,000 or 700,000 people in general, so they did a wonderful job with that, and it was great to see on TV. But there was no way in the world in those conditions that I was going out there. I mean, Long Johns, whatever it hats and North Faces could not save you from that chill factor that there was. And again, I give those people a lot of credit. When I sat there, there were layers and layers stretching from Capitol Hill towards the reflecting pool, basically 2 miles. You know, you basically had people stretching on for 2 miles in terms of being at the National Mall. And again, it was a historic moment, a historic day in our country as there was a transition, and on this show, like Obama, there is going to be a transition in terms of where we're going with this show. Football season, as you all know, is coming towards the end. We only have one game left. We're in the Super Bowl sabbatical, so to speak, and as we're in a bye week before the big game next week, and we're going to focus more in on the college basketball and the basketball as a whole. We have a lot to do as far as the NBA beat is concerned. And you will hear the NBA beat from here on out until the finals, until June. But again, 1 week of football left. It's hard to believe, and it's very painful to know that there's only 1 week of NFL football left. But again, we're going to enjoy the Super Bowl game next week for the show. Next week we will cover the Super Bowl inside out. You will know, by the time I'm done with you, you will know Mike Tomlin's high school locker number combination. Okay, we're going to cover this thing inside out and outside in. So we have a big program lined up for you next week. As far as college basketball goes, you look at, you know, this is a perfect time to start watching college basketball. You could have skipped November. You could have skipped December. You could have missed most of January. Right now, if you want to really get into college basketball, now is about the time. It's coming towards the end of January. February is always a big month. To me, I've always believed that the college basketball season does not begin, to me, officially, until Duke and North Carolina have that first meeting. And, of course, that meeting will be, I say sometime in February. I would say the first week in February, like right after the Super Bowl, North Carolina will host Duke in Chapel Hill, or Duke will host North Carolina in Durham this year. The first game is at Duke, so that's when the college basketball officially starts, in my opinion. And you look at the ACC. The ACC is much better than I thought that it ever was going to be. To no surprise. Well, maybe to a little surprise, Duke is at the top at 4-0. The biggest surprise is the fact that North Carolina already has 2 losses. One of the losses, of course, is the Boston College, which shocked everybody, including myself, in Chapel Hill. The second loss, they lost to Wake Forest at Wake Forest when Wake Forest was playing great. that really wasn't that big of an upset. It was in Winston-Salem. Wake Forest, again, Wake Forest is one of the teams that definitely has a legitimate chance to go to the Final Four. But you look at the ACC, I mean, Duke is Duke, North Carolina is North Carolina. They rebounded well after the Wake Forest loss. But Virginia Tech, I mean, how about the Hokies? Virginia Tech is 3-1 in the conference, 13-5 overall, and they just came off a big win, big-time win over Wake Forest in Winston-Salem at Wake Forest, and it was not one of those fluke wins. I mean, they outplayed Wake Forest from the start of the game. They were up by as many as 16 in the first half and was up by as many as 15 in the second half and held Wake Forest off. Wake Forest looked like the last two or three minutes that Wake Forest was going to come back and pull out the victory, but Virginia Tech does a great job holding them off. Miami of Florida is a pretty good team. Florida State is a pretty good team. So a very deep ACC, and of course today you will have that which once was a classic rivalry within the ACC, Maryland at Duke. Maryland always, I don't care how bad Maryland is or how much of an off year they have, they always play Duke tough, especially in Cameron Indoor. I mean, in their last nine meetings, Maryland is 4-5 against Duke in Cameron Indoor. Nobody has even a record that comes close to that within the conference in the last 10 years or so. As Duke has been dominant at home, one of the toughest places, if not the toughest place to play in, to win in all of college basketball. So look out for that matchup coming up on ESPN at noon. You look at the other Eastern Conference, you look at the other big-time conference in college basketball, you have to go to the Big East, which is by far and away the best conference in all college basketball. I mean, how loaded is a conference that has where Connecticut, who is ranked number 3 in the country, is not, barely can crack the top 2 in the conference. Right now, Marquette is number 1 in the conference with a 5-0 record. You have Louisville coming off that big win last weekend against Pittsburgh. Is at 5-0. They're ranked 12. Marquette's ranked 10th. Connecticut is 3rd in the conference. It's 3rd in the conference at 6-1. They're ranked number 3. Pittsburgh right behind them. They're ranked number 4. They've lost only one game. Then you have Syracuse, Providence, West Virginia, Georgetown. Georgetown is a legitimate top 10 team. I mean, they're ranked number 14, but they are an absolute legitimate top 10 team, and a team that you would not be surprised if they made a run to the Final Four or even to the Elite Eight. They're 8th in the conference right now at 3-3. Notre Dame, and they're ranked 14th. Notre Dame is ranked 19th. They're 9th in the conference. And how about look at Villanova? I mean, to show you how deep this conference is, Villanova is right now 11th in the Big East. They're 2-3 within the conference, and they're ranked number 21st in the country. The Big East is as deep as a conference that I've ever seen in all my years of watching college basketball. It's going to be interesting. And now is about the time where the committee is going to really start to look at some of these teams and their resumes as everybody tries to jockey in for NCAA tournament positioning. How many do you take out of Big East? You can make a case for about 9 to 10 teams. At least, minimum, they're getting 8 teams out of the Big East. I would not be surprised if they got 9, maybe an outside chance of getting 10. It depends on of course, the other conference tournaments and also what happens in the Big East tournament. A big matchup within the Big East. UConn travels down to South Bend to take on Notre Dame. Notre Dame has won about 43 straight home games, which is currently the longest home winning streak in all college basketball. I think there might be a chance that it could end today. UConn has a very good inside game and has the kind of guards that can go out there and really hurt Notre Dame. Notre Dame is not the greatest defensive team, but they do play great in that building, so that should be a very interesting matchup. So, again, we're going to really move the show, the program, into another direction as far as the NBA, as far as college basketball goes. And we're going to try to make this transition from the NFL as smooth as possible. It's going to be very difficult because the NFL I could do a whole show on the NFL week in and week out. Week in and week out, you can talk about trades, not trades, but you can talk about free agents and the draft and the games and the picks. And I mean, the NFL is just, that's why people love the NFL so much, but it will be over before you know it. Coming up, we have a lot of stuff to do on the program. I mean, you have NBA Beat, still have Star of the Week, you have Top Stories, and also I will look back at last week's conference championships. conference championships. Something old, something new will be headed towards the Super Bowl. That is coming up after this update. Women's North Carolina women's basketball coach Kay Yao has passed away at the age of 66. Yao died from breast cancer. It had been an ongoing fight for Yao as she was diagnosed back in 1987 with the disease. In her 34 years at North Carolina State, Yao won over 700 games. She coached 34 years. She coached the women's Olympic team to a 1988 gold medal, and also in 1998, she led North Carolina State to a Final Four appearance. Herm Edwards is out as head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. In three seasons, Edwards was just 15-34, including being 2-14 this season. This season, as the Chiefs just struggled mightily. Edwards did lead the Chiefs to a playoff appearance back in 06, going 9-7, and that was his only playoff appearance there with the Chiefs. Mike Shanahan is rumored to be in the running for that job. I'm telling you, man, I mentioned this last week. That is a very good job, considering the draft picks, the stadium. You got Scott Pioli. That job is much better than what people realize it. And if I was alone with Mike Shanahan, I would seriously consider taking that job. But we'll see what happens with that. NBA scores. Cleveland defeats Golden State 106-105. LeBron James hits a game-winning buzzer beater. He finishes with 32 points, 8 assists. Cleveland improves its record to 33-8. Atlanta takes out Milwaukee 117-87. Flip Murray goes for 25 points. Dallas runs all over Detroit 112-91. Dirk Nowitzki leads the way with 26 points. Indiana edges out Houston 107-102. Danny Granger goes for 26 points. The Spurs just get by the Nets 94-91. A big night for Tim Duncan. Big night for Tim Duncan. 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists. The Clippers squeak out a win against Oklahoma City. Why I even mention this game? Because Eric Gordon, the rookie out of Indiana, had a huge game, 41 points, and Kevin Durant had a career game in a loss for Oklahoma City, 46 points, 15 rebounds, as Oklahoma City just continues to struggle on. They're awful. I mean, they really are awful. PJ Carlson should not have got fired. That is a bad, bad basketball team. Still to come, I will look back at last week's conference championships and give a sneak peek, not too much, but a sneak peek of Super Bowl 43. Call number is 347-215-6180. Again, 347-215-6180 is the call number. Week number 20. Oh, there are no games. My fault. There are no games this week. I gotta get used to it. You have to bear with me. You have to bear with me. I'm already going through NFL withdrawal. There are no games this week, of course. Not even no scrimmages, just Super Bowl talk. But I will say, now maybe it was because, you know, you had Martin Luther King holiday day off. You had the inauguration day off. Maybe it was because I only went to work 3 days this week, that this week went by quick. And normally the first week of a off week for Super Bowl is the slowest week in history. I mean, that first week nobody's talking about anything. You talk about the conference championships for about a half a day, and then, you know, you're on with that story. But this week, for this year, it really went by quick, and that's a good thing, because next week will be very difficult to get through, knowing that you had the last important football game until September coming up. This week will be a difficult week as a football fan. You know, you can talk draft and free agency all you want. It's not like the on the field game. As far as last week's conference championships goes, I didn't see any real big surprises. What happened in the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game is probably what I expected. Baltimore to hang in there for three quarters or so, and then Joe Flacco makes a mistake, and there you go, Pittsburgh 23-14 in that game. And listen, Pittsburgh has hit their stride. It's clear that they hit their stride. Roethlisberger played great. Their defense is, you know, as good as it is, as good as defense as you'll ever see since the 2000 Ravens. And right now, Pittsburgh is clicking on all cylinders. You know, at some point in time, Joe Flacco was going, you know, was going to turn into a pumpkin. I mean, he was not, as a rookie quarterback, there was no way that he was going to go through the playoffs, three road games in a row, back-to-back against Tennessee and Pittsburgh, and get to a Super Bowl. That just was not realistic. It was not going to happen. He's going to be a pretty good player. And before I anoint him, I had to see him be accurate in between 10 to 15 yards. I know he can do down the field in terms of the deep ball. He does have a great, great deep ball. He could throw the ball deep as well as anybody in the league right now. But as far as those intermediate routes and the intermediate passes, it's very suspect. He was only 13 of 30 last week, and again, had the three interceptions. Troy Polamalu, proving why I feel that he's the best safety in football, made a great interception and did his best Ed Reed imitation as he took it back 40 yards. You look at that game, and again, Baltimore had his opportunity because Pittsburgh really was sloppy in that first half. That game should have been over in the first half. I mean, Pittsburgh should have been up by at least 20-7. They messed up the clock situation at the end of the half. That's all on Ben Roethlisberger in terms of managing, in terms of game and clock management. They should have at least got a field goal. You know, you had lineman Sweet dropping a touchdown pass. It's a perfect pass by Roethlisberger. So Pittsburgh really outplayed Baltimore by more than what the score and what the final score indicated. That game could have been easily 31-10, 34-10. But, you know, Baltimore had a great season. Nobody expected them to go this far, and they have certainly, listen, they more than likely have a quarterback. That defense is always going to be amongst the top five, top ten in the league. So you expect to see Baltimore in contention for years to come. As far as Philadelphia, Arizona, I picked Philadelphia to go to Super Bowl and also to win Super Bowl. I was not shocked that they lost this game. I thought, you know, I said last week that this would be a close game and would go down to the wire. The thing that shocked me the most was how the Philadelphia defense played against Arizona. Jim Johnson got destroyed in this game. I mean, you could give Todd Haley and Ken Whisenhunt all the credit in the world. The game plan, the play calling by Todd Haley was flawless. It took Jim Johnson basically two quarters to make any adjustment. And you know, when you get down 24-6 on the road, I don't care who you are, I don't care who your quarterback is, it's pretty hard to make up that many points. Philadelphia did come back, of course, and take a 25-24 lead. And you know, that missed extra point was big by David Akers when they were on their way to their comeback. But their defense, when it counted the most, the defense just did not have an answer for one Larry Fitzgerald, who has emerged. And listen, I'm a Randy Moss. I love Randy Moss. He's a great player, and I still think Randy Moss is the best receiver in the league. But at worst, Larry Fitzgerald is the second best receiver in the NBA. I mean, in the NFL, at worst, right now. And he has the best hand. He has just tremendous hands. He swallows the ball when he catches. He doesn't drop anything. He's as physical as they come. Running after the catch, he runs great routes. I mean, the guy is just an absolute monster. He has been, by far and away, the deep dominant player in this postseason. I mean, he's already broken Jerry Rice's record for receiving yards in a single postseason, and he is a guy that can just single-handedly wreck a defense. I loved what Ty Haley did with the Anquan Boldin situation. Anquan Boldin, you know, and I'm sick of these receivers. Whether it be Chad Johnson's of the world, the Terrell Owens of the world, you know, I'm sick of these receivers pretending like the sun rises and sets with them. Good for Todd Haley, you know. He gave it right back to Anquan Boldin. Anquan Boldin wasn't nowhere near full strength. He was running half speed. Clearly, he was hampered by the hamstring. He had, you know, had a decent, okay game, 4 catches, 34 yards. But you know, you're gonna snap on your coach. For taking you out the game for a play. I mean, give me a break. And then he doesn't even celebrate with the team after they won the championship. Here's a franchise that has been like the Los Angeles Clippers of football of the NFL, they've been awful for so long. They get to a Super Bowl, and here you are pouting away, and you can't even celebrate with your team. You walk out the locker room, no interviews, and just go about your way. I can definitely see them moving him in the offseason. I don't see this being a distraction for the Super Bowl, but this will be a big distraction in the offseason. Of course, he's complaining all about his contract or lack thereof. He wants Fitzgerald-type money, and he is a great player. Anquan Boldin is a great player, a legitimate number one. But he signed the contract, and, you know, that'll be something that they deal with in the offseason. Myself, with Steve, you have Steve Breslin, I would trade him and get a top flight and get a second-round draft pick if I'm the Arizona organization. So you have Arizona and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is opening as a 7-point favorite, as well as they should be. They are the better team. They do have the number one defense. They do have a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And so does Arizona. The quarterback matchup in that game basically is a wash. I mean, Warner has won a Super Bowl. This will be his third Super Bowl appearance. I think it's gonna be a close game. I think it's going to be much closer than people expected. I do think Arizona has an advantage coaching-wise because Wisenhunt and Russ Grimm know Pittsburgh's offense so well. Wisenhunt, of course, was an assistant there. He was assistant, and along with Russ Grimm there back when Pittsburgh won its last Super Bowl in the 05 season. So I do think they will have that advantage, but I think Pittsburgh is a better team. I will give you my pick next week. I'm sure based on what I've just said that you can kind of understand where I will be leaning towards. But I think it's going to be a close game. This was not, you know, I was scared of this Super Bowl. This was the matchup I did not want to see. I did not want to see Arizona in the Super Bowl. But Arizona, I'm sold on Arizona right now. You know, they're playing with great confidence. They have the chip on their shoulder. Their defense has improved. It's not great, but it is improved. And Kurt Warner, listen, there are not too many quarterbacks. There's not that many guys in the NFL that have a Super Bowl MVP on their mantle and that are currently active. Kurt Warner is one of those quarterbacks. And this will be a unique Super Bowl in the sense that you will have two quarterbacks who have both won Super Bowls going against each other. That does not happen often in today's NFL with parity and what have you. And with parity, most of the time you see either just one quarterback with a Super Bowl appearance or championship, or no quarterbacks with a Super Bowl championship to their under their belts. Both of these guys have rings. Ben Roethlisberger really has a chance to really establish himself, take his game, and his legacy to a whole nother level with a second Super Bowl before the age of 30, and he's already joined a short list of quarterbacks who have appeared in more than one Super Bowl. Again, before the age of 30, Roethlisberger right now is only 27 years old and definitely one of the game's top passers. And I think it's fair that, and I didn't believe this before, but I think it's fair that we can put Kurt Warner now in the Super Bowl, two MVPs, this will be his third Super Bowl appearance, and to take this franchise with an average defense, a suspect running game. I know he has two beasts for receivers, but still, to take Arizona to a Super Bowl, it's just, you know, it's, I think it's more impressive taking this team to a Super Bowl than it was certainly than what he did with the Rams, considering all the talent that he was blessed with in his St. Louis days. So Super Bowl 43 will be next week, next Sunday, and again, we will have a special 90-minute broadcast where, again, I will tear apart the Super Bowl, dissect it to a point to where you will get sick of me talking about the Super Bowl, but we'll do that next week on the Saturday morning wake-up call. The call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Again, two questions of the morning. One, and we're going to be heading into this direction after the update, who is the best player in the NBA right now? Who is the best player in the NBA right now? Chime in on that. And number two, if you were fortunate enough to make it down to the inauguration, give me your inauguration moment. What stood out for you? Just how cold was it? And any other interesting story, keep it clean, any other interesting story that you will have as you had a couple million people down there in the mall this past Tuesday morning. Still to come, coming up, we have NBA Beat, Star of the Week, and also Top Stories on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Women's basketball coach Kay Yao has died at the age of 66. from breast cancer. She was diagnosed in 1987 with the disease. In her 34-year career at North Carolina State, Yao won over 700 games. She also coached the women's Olympic team to a 1988 gold medal and led North Carolina State to the 1998 Final Four. Herm Edwards is out as head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Edwards served 3 years with the Chiefs, going 15-34, including 2-14 in this season. It is rumored that Mike Shanahan is in the running as one of the leading candidates for this position. NBA scores: Cleveland defeats Golden State 106-105. LeBron James hits a game-winning shot with no time left on the clock. James finishes with 32 points, 8 assists. Monte Ellis, in his return in a losing cause, finished with 20 points. Of course, he has been out all season with that ankle injury that he lied about. Atlanta Hawks snap Milwaukee's Friday night winning streak as they destroy the Bucks 117-87. Flip Murray scored, leads the way for Atlanta with 25 points. Dallas runs over Detroit 112-91. Dirk Diggler Nowitzki goes for 26 points. Indiana gets past Houston 107-102. Dane Granger leads the way with 26 points. San Antonio continues to play well as they get by New Jersey 94-91. Michael Finley hit a big three-pointer to kind of put that game away. Duncan had a great game, 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists. And the Clippers squeaked past Oklahoma City. Eric Gordon, 107-104. Eric Gordon goes for 41 points, a career high, and he's a rookie that's playing well right now. And Kevin Durant, the second-year phenom, had a career game, 46 points and 15 rebounds. 347-215 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Again, 347-215-6180 is your call number. And again, still to come, we have NBA Beat and Top Stories. So stay with us on the Saturday morning wake up call. The NBA Beat is back and better than ever. There's still a line from a couple of hosts on ESPN. Listen, I'm going to keep the NBA Beat running from here on out to June. There's a lot to talk about in the NBA right now, a lot going on, And, of course, one of our questions of the morning is, who is the best player in the NBA? I'll give you my opinion on that, but that's one of the questions of the morning, who is the best player in the NBA? The Celtics have gotten their second win back. Clearly, they right now find themselves at 36-9. They've won 7 straight games. They're playing well. The schedule's been a little soft during that time, but they did defeat Orlando a couple nights ago, 90-80. Paul Pierce had an excellent game in that. You look at the NBA right now, and again, I still think it's about the big three. I still think it's about Boston, LA, and Cleveland in that order. I know people are real high on Orlando. Orlando has played great. They are playing great right now. They are 33-9. But the bottom line is, I think you saw this. On Thursday, they are not on that. They in a big series, they cannot beat the Celtics or Cleveland in a big series. I mean, there's certain teams that are tailor made to be great regular season teams. I mean, Phoenix was that way when they had Nash there, and when Nash was in his prime, and Marion and that, Stoudemire. They were a team that was could shoot the three, run up and down the court. It was an entertaining style of basketball. When it came to the postseason, when you have to defend somebody, when those 3 points get taken away, then it's a whole different story. If you can close out Orlando on 3-point shots, then they have no chance of winning. I mean, they rely so much on that 3-point shot. other than Dwight Howard, they really don't have any inside presence. And again, they're a very good team. They're probably one player. They're probably one good player away from being a championship caliber team. But they are not an elite basketball team. They are not a top tier. They are not a top team. They're very good, but they're not quite on that level in terms of the Clippers. Not the Clippers. Oh, jeez, the Lakers, Celtics, and Cavaliers. I know they beat the Lakers twice. I understand that. But again, regular season, catching a team off of back to back, you have to take that into consideration. Of course, earlier this week you had the showdown in Tinseltown between LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. The Lakers won easily, going away by 17 points. And I mean, I was certainly surprised how easily the Lakers won. But as far as the LeBron James Kobe Bryant matchup went, it was a bit of a wash. Neither guy shot well. But I'll say this, Kobe Bryant is still the best player in the NBA. I mean, he goes out there, dislocates his finger on basically the first possession of the game, might have been the first or second possession of the game when he was guarding LeBron, and still went out there, scored 20 points, had 12 assists, and was able to, you know, and had a big fourth quarter, and he basically helped put the game away in that fourth quarter. And again, when he, you know, when push comes to shove, when the moment gets big, you know, his game rises to another level. And I mean, again, he really kept LeBron when he was guarding. When LeBron James was not scoring on him at all, and when he was guarding LeBron James, he really locked down LeBron James. LeBron James did his damage against Lamar Odom and Lavin Romanovich, but when Kobe Bryant took him on head on defensively, LeBron was very quiet. LeBron could not get to the rim. He had to settle on taking, you know, tough jump shots. Now, he might have settled too much on those jump shots. The Lakers, overall, the Lakers did a very good defensive job on LeBron. And also, I had to throw a reason in because he took some turns guarding LeBron and did a decent job. But when they went head to head, really, Kobe definitely got the better of that matchup. Now, I'm not saying that makes him the better of the two players. I thought he was better even before that matchup. But again, the difference between those two, again, I still think it is Kobe Bryant is a more consistent jump shot, and Kobe Bryant, again, last two or three minutes of the game, just will take over a game at will and is still the best closer in the game. Now, with that said, LeBron is right there. I mean, Kobe's driving the car. LeBron is ready to take the wheel without question. But his defensively, LeBron James is not nowhere near the same player that he was. Not only coming into the league, but even from last year. I mean, his defensive turnaround has been one of the great turnarounds that I've ever seen a player in less than a year do. I mean, he is a tremendous defensive player right now. I mean, he plays the passing lanes. He does not gamble and leave his team out there. He's blocking shots from behind. He hustles on every play, and he did take the challenge of guarding Kobe Bryant. Did a pretty good job. I mean, Kobe did not shoot well. I don't know how much was that due to the finger injury, but regardless, he for the most part, he kept Kobe out the lane and did an excellent job guarding him. And he is one of the candidates for defensive player. I probably have to give a slight edge right now to Dwayne Wade based on the fact that he's averaging almost two blocks and two steals a game. He's definitely averaging over two steals, but he's averaging basically close to two blocks, which is unheard of for a two guard. But LeBron James certainly will be first team all defense. In the first team all defense. If you had to ask me, give me the top five players, and I always like doing this because it's a lot of fun giving a top five. I would probably have to go with Kobe 1, LeBron 2, Dwayne Wade 3, Chris Paul 4, and Tim Duncan 5. And you say, well, how Tim Duncan 5 would say at Dwight Howard? Number one, Tim Duncan carried the Spurs when Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker were injured early in the season. He's still averaging 20-10, and he's still playing pretty good defense. I mean, is he a great defender? Is he the defensive player that he once was? No. He's not the dominant defensive player that he once was, but he's still very good. Listen, until Dwight Howard can get his team to at least the conference finals, I can't put him up there with one Tim Duncan. Dwight Howard certainly will be amongst the top five before you know it. As far as the All-Star team goes, I didn't have any problems with the Western Conference. I mean, you had Kobe, Chris Paul, Tim Duncan, Yao Ming, and Amari Stoudemire. Stoudemire beats out Carmelo Anthony in the last, the 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock hour. I mean, Carmelo probably was having a better year. Carmelo was probably having a better year, slightly, considering that his defense and rebounding had stepped up a bit, especially when Chauncey Billups came over with the trade. But I mean, you can't go crazy, but I mean, if you're a Phoenix fan, first of all, Carmelo was hurt, so you're not, I don't know if he's even gonna be able to play in the All-Star game. And he's been hurt for the last couple of weeks or so with that hand injury. I can't go crazy over that, over him getting chosen over Stoudemire making it. Stoudemire is putting up numbers, not playing any defense as usual, but he still is putting up All-Star caliber numbers. Eastern Conference. Yeah, I mean, Alan, listen, there are guys who are going to be voted on this team, even if they retire and turn 70. It is a popularity contest to an extent. Is Allen Iverson having a great year? Like, is Allen Iverson an All-Star this year? I don't think so. I mean, Allen Iverson has not played great. He's not playing terrible. His numbers are down, and he just hasn't been playing up to the level that we've been accustomed to him playing. I know he had to make a transition with Detroit, but I can make a case for either Joe Johnson or Danny Granger being over Allen Iverson as far as having a better year. But again, he is Allen Iverson, so he gets the nod. Dwight Howard obviously is not even an argument. Dwayne Wade, no argument there. LeBron James, enough said. Kevin Garnett, a lot of people have a problem with this, and especially one Gary Payton, who was on TNT a couple of days ago, and arguing Chris Bosh over Kevin Garnett. First of all, Chris Bosh is on a team that hasn't done anything. Okay, if he's that good, his team would be amongst the top four, amongst at least the top five or six in the Eastern Conference. Toronto right now is really has been a non-factor. Despite the fact that they made the Jermaine O'Neal trade. And, Kevin Garnett, again, he is the anchor on a team that's 37-9. I mean, that's all there is to it. Garnett will be first team all defensive again this year. He's only averaging 16 points and 9 rebounds, but he's also on the team with two other guys, who score a lot of points in Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. So his numbers, he really is playing, but he's playing better than what his numbers would indicate. And again, I mean, who would you take? I mean, rather take right now. I mean, Chris Bosh in a big playoff in a playoff spot. Chris Bosh or Kevin Garnett. I think I would lean towards Kevin Garnett. So I really don't have a problem with that. Joe Johnson, Chris Bosh, both will be on the reserves when they come out later on this week, more than likely. Alonzo Mourning, of course, announced his retirement a couple of days ago. Mourning had an interesting career because if it wasn't for how the Basketball Hall of Fame is configured, you can make a case that he's not a Hall of Famer. Unlike the NFL, the NFL is strictly pro football. I mean, you have the College Football Hall of Fame, and then you have the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So it doesn't matter. So it's not a thing. It's not a cumulative thing. It's not where you combine what you did in college and the NFL all into one. And that's how they do it with the NBA, with basketball. There's no College Basketball Hall of Fame, no NBA Hall of Fame. There is a Basketball Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame of basketball. That's it. It combines collegiate with the pro, international, all those elements go to it. So based on the fact of what he did at Georgetown and also what he did in his first 8 years with the Miami Heat, you probably have to put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, his first 8 years, though, it's not even a question. Mourning was 20-10 and basically three blocks a game during his first 8 years. But in his last 8 seasons, and I know, the kidney definitely had a lot to do with this, as he was just bombarded with the illness and injuries. He only had 3 years where he averaged double figures in his last 8 years of his career. And so based on that, it would come into question whether or not he was a Hall of Famer. It was strictly the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. But with all that said, he is a Hall of Famer. You would have to vote him in based on everything he's accomplished. I've never thought Mourning was a great player. He, at best to me, was the sixth or seventh best center in the league, or fifth or sixth best center in the league. I mean, he had Shaq, who was better. Patrick Ewing was a better player. David Robinson was a better player than him. Hakeem Olajuwon was better. I can also talk to him. So I mean, those guys definitely would have had a much better career. Even if I want to say Tim Duncan as a center, I always call Tim Duncan a power forward. But if you want to flip him as a center, he was a better player than Alonzo Mourning. But Mourning again had a very good career, A guy who was a dominant defensive player. Are you surprised that he didn't make more all defensive teams in his career? But you had guys like Olajuwon, Dikembe Mutombo, who took a lot of those honors, and even Ben Wallace took a lot of those honors away from him. So, but he had a very good career. He's done a lot off the court in terms of as far as charities go. So, and he did get his championship. So he was happy. I was definitely happy to see him win a championship. So coming up on the Saturday morning wake up call, 10 minutes after 11 o'clock hour, we will have Star of the Week. And we also have our top stories of the week. That is coming up. That is coming up after the update. Women's basketball coach Kay Yao passes away at the age of 66. Yao coached the North Carolina Wolfpack for 34 years. During that time period, she won over 700 games. She led the Wolfpack to a 1998 Final Four appearance. She also led the Women's Olympic team to the 1988 gold medal. Herman Edwards is out as head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Edwards, in his three year tenure, only went 15-34, including a 2-14 season this year. Mike Shanahan is supposedly the lead candidate to take over that job. Who knows? Shanahan is familiar with Kansas City as going against him all those years. You know, when he was coaching the Broncos, but that definitely is not final. NBA scores: Cleveland defeats Golden State 106-105. LeBron James hits a game-winning shot. Hits a game-winning shot with no time remaining, and also scored 32 points, 8 assists. Cleveland goes to 33-8 on the season. Monte Ellis also had 20 points. Had 20 points for the Golden State Warriors. At the Atlanta Hawks dominate Milwaukee 117-87. Flip Murray leads the way for Atlanta, going for 25 points. Dallas runs all over Detroit 112-91. Dirk Nowitzki goes for 26 points in the win for Dallas. Indiana gets past Houston 107-102. Injured Houston, and what's new with that? Danny Granger goes for 26 points to lead Indiana. San Antonio defeats New Jersey 94-91. Tim Duncan goes for 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists. And also, some other winners in the association include Toronto, New York, Minnesota, and Charlotte. Also, the Clippers sweep past Oklahoma City 107-104. Eric Gordon leads the Clippers with 41 points, and Kevin Durant leads Oklahoma City in a losing effort with 46 points and 15 rebounds. Again, the call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Again, the two questions of the morning are: who is the best player in the NBA? And if you were at the inauguration, give me your inauguration moment. I was definitely interested to see what took place there if you were down there for the inauguration. Coming up still to come, we have Star of the Week and also top stories of the week. A lot going on in the world of sports. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Not too many stars this week, as it was a very slow week as far as big time performances go. But there were two. There was two people that stood out, or a person in a team that stood out, in my opinion. Number one, you had Andrew Bynum of the a center for the Los Angeles Lakers. Bynum had a big game against the Clippers in an easy win this week, going for a career-high 42 points, 15 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And that's, the Lakers badly need that kind of play out night in and night out. And also, the Virginia Tech basketball team, the Hokies, upset Wake Forest in Winston-Salem. At the time, Wake Forest was the only Division One unbeaten team, and they were prior to that undefeated overall and ranked number one. They go into they go into Wake Forest's own building and defeat them. And again, that was not a fluke win. They clearly outplayed them from start to finish, deserved to win, and deserved to win the game. And that's all there is to it. And Virginia Tech is looking like one of these teams that just comes out of nowhere and surprises a lot of people. This is not the first time they've done it. They beat the number one team. You remember 2 years ago, they beat North Carolina twice. One of those times, I think both those times, North Carolina was ranked number one in the country. And one of those times, they beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill 2 years ago. So they repeat the favor to Virginia Tech, to Wake Forest down in Winston-Salem with a big win. And probably have to give it to Virginia Tech. I mean, again, Andrew Bynum had a great game against it, but it was against the Clippers out of all teams, so that's not exactly wasn't exactly the Spurs or the Celtics that he did it against. So I'll probably have to give it to the Clippers. I mean, give it to Virginia Tech basketball for going to the number one team's place backyard and taking them out. Still to come, we have top stories. We have top stories. So a busy week of sports. We have that is on the way on this Saturday morning wake up call. That is still to come. Back with you on the Saturday morning wake up call, top stories. Mark McGwire, Big Mac, Mark McGwire's brother, Jay McGwire, claims that he introduced McGwire to HGH and steroids back in 1994. He claims that he injected McGwire, and also his brother's ex-fiance claims to have seen McGwire use steroids. And again, I don't know if this is true. I mean, the guy, Jay McGwire, sounds like a jealous brother, sounds like a hater who's just trying to get back at his brother and sell a book. And he has a book, by the way, which no company is trying to publish right now. He's tossed the idea to a number of publishers, and they just have turned them down. So, I mean, he could be some guy who just comes out of nowhere and just, hates his brother, or they don't get along, and this is his revenge. But the bottom line is, Mark McGwire, who already is so far removed from the Hall of Fame, it's not even funny right now. This doesn't help. I mean, this is not positive publicity from his standpoint. So I can't see, unless McGwire, we are a forgiving society as far as a sports nation. You know, we forgive everybody and anybody. But until McGwire comes out and admits to using steroids and says, hey, I did this, I did that, I'm sorry, forget about it. He's not going to sniff the Hall of Famer. I mean, he's not even going to, because first of all, people don't even treat McGuire as a true Hall of Famer. People believe for a fact that McGuire, had he not taken steroids, he never would have came close to the 586 home runs or 83 home runs that he has. That he really wasn't a great player to begin with. And he did. I mean, he really wasn't. I mean, he wasn't a gold glove. He wasn't a great fielder. I mean, he had a decent batting average. He didn't steal bases. He was not a great all-around player. It's not like he's like a Barry Bonds type. Even before all the steroids talk, a guy had a high on-base percentage, stole bases, great defensive player, had speed, you know, and had a lot of speed to go along with his hitting skills. So McGuire and Sosa is not respected as that. You can put him in that same boat as well, as being guys who are just products of small ballparks and steroids. So McGuire is not respected from that standpoint as it is, and this certainly does not help with his brother coming out with these allegations. And again, I don't know the relationship. Obviously is not good, but he will not be sniffing the Hall of Fame anytime soon. Jeff Kent, who played 17 years in Major League Baseball, retires at the age of 40. Kent was a five-time All-Star, won the MVP award in 2000, and a guy who, you know, is the all-time leader in home runs amongst second basemen with 351. And I think you have to put Kent in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's a question whether or not he is a Hall of Famer. But you look at second basemen all-time, other than Rogers Hornsby, Joe Morgan. I mean, who's been better? Who's better than Jeff Kent from an offensive standpoint? Now, Ryan Sandberg had an excellent career, and he is in the Hall of Fame as well. But he has more home runs than Ryan Sandberg and RBIs. Now, Sandberg was a much better offensive player. But Kent was a when Kent was in his prime, he was a tremendous offensive player, and he was the best offensive second baseman in baseball for a 5 to 6 year period, especially those years when he was with the Giants along with Barry Bonds. Was not the greatest teammate in the world as far as people getting along with him, but again, you have to respect what he did on the field, and again, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame without question. I don't know if he'll get on the first ballot. I doubt that he will get on the first ballot, but I think eventually probably the second or third time around, he will eventually get in the Hall of Fame. There was never any connection with him or steroids, which is something you have to take into consideration nowadays. I mean, the guys who are coming up for the Hall of Fame now, especially players who, you know, played between 1994 and now 2006, 2008, as soon as those guys start retiring, you're going to have to look back and check their track record as far as, you know, were their names ever involved in steroids and, you know, in that whole era, because it is – the steroid had its own era, there's no question, from, say, 1994 to, say, 2006, 2005, 2006. Home runs, there was the steroid era. Now, home runs have been down in the last two or three years as Major League Baseball finally, through the pressure of the public and also the government, has cracked down on steroids. And you've seen home runs down and runs in general being down, but, you know, Hall of Fame, I mean, guys who are voting for the Hall, these writers are not putting any, they're not going to put these guys, the Rafael Palmeiros, the Roger Clemens of the world, the Mark McGuire, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, they're not putting any of these guys in the Hall of Fame with the steroid allegations that they have. So Jeff Kent found a way, and along with Ken Griffey as well, those two guys have found a way to stay clear of those allegations. Matt Castle says he is okay with returning as Tom Brady's backup, like he has a choice. I mean, if you're Matt Castle, now he says all the right things. I'm going to read to you a couple of quotes. This is Tom's team, Castle said Thursday on ESPN News. The Patriots have been Tom's team. He's built that franchise up with his own two hands. He's the guy, and he was the MVP the year before. I realized that. He's been such a mentor for me that I would say no, there is no quarterback competition. But I've learned so many things from Tom, and hopefully it will help me in my career. I mean, why are you even talking about Tom Brady? Why do you have to give the stamp of approval that I'm fine with being a backup? you have no choice but to be the backup if Tom Brady is healthy. You know, take your $14 million, which you will get, if the Patriots choose to franchise him, which I think they will. The Patriots have until February 5th to place a franchise tag on Matt Castle that would make him basically a $14 million backup. And the Patriots probably will do that because who knows when Brady will be back. Brady might not be back for the beginning of the season. So you don't want to get off to a bad, to an 0-2, 0-3 start, say if you don't have a quarterback at all. So, I mean, from an insurance standpoint, it makes sense to sign Matt Castle. And the Patriots have enough money under the salary cap to have two quarterbacks making that kind of money for at least 1 year. Now, if the Patriots choose to make him if the Patriots choose not to re-sign him, he will be a free agent. Matt Castle, that is, will be a free agent as of February 27th. So that'll keep your eyes certainly on that. As far as the Australian Open goes, it's hard to get to. Listen, I love tennis as much as anyone, but frankly, it's very hard to get into the Australian Open considering that Super Bowl week. A lot of other things going on in sports, and the times just kill you. I mean, they're playing live matches at 3 a.m. I mean, I don't know how many people are staying up on a work night listening to watching the Australian Open tennis. I will say this, and as Venus Williams is already out of the tournament, which is no surprise. She never plays well down, in Australia. If you can get a final in terms of the men go, if you can get a semifinal final where that features Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, Andy Murray, and Novak Djokovic, that'd be a great 2 days of tennis. If you can get those four players in the final of that tournament, that'll be some exciting tennis to watch. Those right now are by far and away the four best players in the world. Andy Murray's playing well right now. Nadal, Federer, both playing great. Djokovic, of course, is the defending champion. So you get that final, and if all goes to form, Djokovic and Federer will play in one semifinal, and Andy Murray and Rafael Nadal will play in the other semifinal. Of course, Murray toyed with Rafael Nadal back in the U.S. Open as he just had his way with him. A couple of acknowledgments before I head on out before we leave the program. Definitely like to wish a speedy recovery to my cousin Courtney. I know she's hurting over the Eagles losing, but the Eagles are the Eagles. They are 1-4 in these NFC championships, but a speedy recovery to her, and also a shout out to Tony D, if she's listening. I told her I would call her name out before the program ended. Of course, next week I will have a big Super Bowl program. Again, I will have more information on those two teams than you can shake a stick at. I'll be looking forward towards that. I'll be looking forward towards your phone calls as well on a special 90-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Take it easy, and I will see you next week.
If you walk through the garden, it'll watch your back. I'll take you on the island. I'll be sitting outside. If you walk through Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil bringing out in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. But you don't have to worry. Thank you.